And welcome, friends, to this, the Thursday edition of the Grace Hour. We're broadcasting live right here from our studios, which, of course, are located at the home of the Greater Grace World Outreach in Baltimore, Maryland. Thanks so much for being with us today. And we're glad to be back in the studio. Of course, last week, all of us here at the Grace Hour were gathering in Warsaw, Poland for the European Conference, which was an outstanding conference, a great time. And we do want to take a moment and thank all of you that we spoke to at the conference that told us that you tune in to the Grace Hour on a regular basis, and you're both watching, listening, and responding to each of our broadcasts. That means a lot to us here at the Grace Hour. We want to thank you, and we're greatly encouraged by your words of kindness and encouragement and what the program means to you. So thank you so much for that, and we're glad to know that the Grace Hour is reaching across the globe, not just here in the greater Baltimore area or in the United States, but throughout the world. So thanks so much for joining us today. My name is Pastor John Love. Pastor Schaller has joined us in the studio today. We'll be your hosts for this broadcast. And today we've got a fascinating subject and theme, what it means to be a victim versus having a victim's mentality. Pastor Schaller, it's interesting to think that the foremost victim of all human history never adopted a victim's mentality. The New Testament after, and of course we're talking about the Lord himself, who was genuinely a victim, but he also commands believers to have that same attitude as we go through life. This whole idea of victimization, and again, we want to draw the distinction between being a legitimate victim, which happens to many people, and then those who are not necessarily victims but have adopted this victim mentality. There's such a difference between the two. Christ, a bona fide victim. Joseph in the Old Testament, a victim. We could draw a list of people that genuinely are victims or were victims, and yet the way they approach life after becoming a victim makes it real clear to us that they didn't adopt the victim mentality. And I think that we have to separate the two. It's easy to hold on to a victim mentality without really having been a victim.
How would you describe a victim mentality?
It's a mentality that describes the harm that's been done to us. And the problem with that is that it minimizes our own condition. We don't even recognize our own sinfulness, our own flaws, our own ability to hurt and wound others. It just kind of focuses upon ourselves. And in other words, we're just innocent victims as we make our way through life. And anything bad that's happened to us is the direct result of what others have done to us.
In Deuteronomy, there's a verse there where it says God is speaking to the Jewish people, and he's saying, you know, I don't want you to borrow money. I want you to lend money, like you give it out or lend it, but not borrow it. And then he says in that chapter that I want you to be the head and not the tail. You know, when you owe money, then you're subject to the loaner, the bank or the person. So you're the tail. There is somebody else in charge of your life. So that maybe could be used to describe like how, where God wants us to be. He wants us to be in charge of our lives, that we are the head and not the tail. But we can imagine when somebody has a disability and they could feel that, they are subject to that disability. You know, the classic example, Helen Keller, I think spinal meningitis is a very young child and went deaf and blind, and what disability she had, and yet, you know, her teacher, I think it was Ann Sullivan, what was this incredible teacher, a woman who was able to teach her sign language, you know, with the hands, and, you know, there's a movie on it and so on. So the point of our podcast today is that when the Spirit of God is in us and we have the mind of Christ in our hearts, then we're able to take the bad things and those things that maybe the world has a different message. And I might say that I do think the world, intentionally or unintentionally, just because they're without God, maybe they easily do this, and that is that they reinforce people being the tail and not the head, that you are a victim, and this is where you have to live. You know, what has happened to you is unfair. Don't forgive. Look for revenge. You park right here. It's not going to change. I'm very sorry about that, but you're poor and you can't change that. You're uneducated. You can't change that. You're disabled. You can't change that. You've been in the war and you lost a limb or two or even maybe four. I mean, and this is where you are living now. And we are not in denial of the pain and the suffering that people have when they feel that they are the tail, and they actually are the tail. They are victims. So we're not denying that. Mm-hmm. But then how to process that. And of course, you and I are healthy sitting behind a microphone, and maybe we could say it's easy to say, but I think it needs to be said that when God made us, he said, who made the mouth? And who made the ears and the deaf and the dumb? Actually, in Exodus 4, when he talked to Moses, who was looking like with a victim mentality, you know, I can't speak. I can't go to Pharaoh. That's my thing. You know, I can't do this. And the Lord said, well, who made the deaf and the dumb and the blind? God is saying, I did.
Wow.
You know, I did. I made that. And so that means that it looks like God could make people victims in life. And in the history, you see suffering people, and you see, and you can get angry with God, or you can, you know, without sounding too harsh, but we can change and be submitted to him and look for him to lead us and guide us, like Helen Keller did and many have done. And so I'm not saying it's easy. I'm just saying, what message, if you are a victim, what message do you want to hear? Stay in that and develop a victim mentality, mm-hmm. or discover something by God's grace that's new to you.
Mm. Beautiful. Because it, you know, when we're talking about this theme and this subject, we're prone to ask this question. Do we have a response? Can we respond to being a victim? Is there a way out? Is there any hope for us? Or should we just simply jump into accepting the victim mentality?
Yeah, or let's say a victim can respond to the world's message, and that is, you have no way out. This is your lot in life, and just stay there. You're frozen in that, and that's where you're living. Or you cry a lot about it and kick and be real unhappy and marginalize yourself by your words and attitude. You know, there is a thing about people, and they do draw away. They withdraw from negativity. They do. They will stop seeing you. You maybe become bitter. You're very negative all the time, and that people do draw away. You might find yourself more alone. And that's in Psalm 64. Well, the reaction to that bit of information could be, yeah, I want to be alone. I'm miserable. I'm bitter. I'm angry. And that's where I'm living. And that's where I'm parking. So the other thing to respond to is the better message.
Yeah.
And the grace of God and the mind of God toward you. So that takes an effort to get that and cultivate that and be a part of that.
Yeah.
But you find yourself, you know, in the midst of fellowship.
The victim mentality also seems to just put aside any personal responsibility that people have for their lives.
Mm-hmm.
There's an interesting proverb, Proverbs 19:3, which says, when a man's folly brings his way to ruin, his heart rages against the Lord. What a fascinating proverb that is.
Mm.
In other words, I'm going to blame God.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because my own decisions that I was responsible to make have produced a nightmare in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to accept responsibility for making those decisions. I'm going to rage against the Lord.
Yes.
That's incredible.
Now, this is not a political program, but why are you talking about the Democrats like that?
Well, an interesting thought. Let me read this.
I got to cover myself on that. No, you know, it's obvious, it's in our face that whether you're a Democrat or Republican, whatever party you are part of, you can always find individuals that are disappointed, business people, athletes, everything. You can be disappointed. I would say NFL, maybe that would be a better NFL football player gets an attitude and becomes like negative, and then like his plan goes south. He gets in trouble somehow, and maybe he gets drinking, and the team doesn't want him anymore, and he gets fired, and he's not correcting himself.
Exactly.
But he's raging against life, raging against the Lord.
Yeah. That happens.
Yeah.
That really does happen.
Can our trouble correct us, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you adopt that victimhood mentality, well, it just encourages you to place the blame on circumstances or other people. And what does it produce? It produces anger and resentment and bitterness
mm-hmm.
and rage in a person's life.
Mm-hmm.
And those things poison the soul and ultimately destroy a person's way of life.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot to be said about this. And we were talking earlier about Viktor Frankl, who was a Holocaust survivor, he said, what's important is that we use the word responsibility, and he breaks that down and says, responsibility is response able. Are we response able? And the answer to that question is, we are. But if you adopt the victim's mentality, then you just exclude yourself from taking any responsibility. And no matter what happens to you, no matter what the fallout of your decisions are, it's not your fault. Others are to blame.
Yes, right.
What a
right.
terrible way to go through life.
Yeah, and actually, we are looking for people who will take the responsibility. And if we fail, we're able to say, I have failed, you know. I can take responsibility, right?
Yes.
And then after my failure, I take responsibility to move on and live my life. I think of Martha Stewart, you know, who has this company on home goods and home improvement, home remaking, interior design, paint and all that. And she had to, and then she was guilty of cheating on her taxes. She paid her fines. I think she went to jail a while
mm-hmm.
and then came back out and just went on with an attitude
mm-hmm.
of, okay, is my failure going to define my life, or can I move on and live my life?
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because as believers, oftentimes we may suffer because we're honoring God with our lives. Yeah. We may suffer. Well, Peter describes it this way, 1 Peter 4, verse 19. We may suffer according to the will of God, but then we should commit our souls to him in doing good as to a faithful creator. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is the attitude of the born-again believer. Yeah, yes. I may suffer because of my faith, because I'm living in a faithless world, and I can suffer because of that, but it doesn't matter. I'm committing my way unto the Lord. Mm-hmm. He's going to take care of me. I'm going to be in the hands of a faithful creator, and I can actually do good instead of just complaining and blaming and criticizing and saying the reason why my life is a disaster is because of, and then go down the list and name the people of the circumstances. I can say I'm committed my way into the Lord, and he's blessing me.
Yes, yes. You know, one example that is in our face as American people in this regard, and regardless of your political persuasion, but whenever somebody faces, you know, ridicule and serious accusations and so on, and they go on an assassination attempt, and they just keep moving on because of what they believe, then it draws your attention to their character and what's in their heart, because you can quit. When you become a victim, you can quit, you know. But if you are in a wheelchair and you don't quit, the governor of Texas, for example, and many examples of people that, whether it's a court trial with Martha Stewart, a physical disability with Helen Keller, the governor of Texas, who a tree fell on him when he was jogging when he was 28 years old. And he just has this attitude. I mean, if God gives us the grace for that. And in the church, that attitude of overcoming is the spirit of God. For God has not given us the spirit of being a victim, the spirit of fear, but of love, power, love, and a sound mind.
Wow. Mm. You know, having a victim's mentality, one of the authors of one of the articles we read says, if you have it, he said, it sucks the joy right out of your life.
Yes, okay.
It's a good way to describe it. It does. Because you're not thankful for your blessings.
Yes.
You don't even see the good when it comes.
Okay.
Because you're too occupied with your disadvantages. You're too occupied with what people have done to you. And it only seems to look at and magnify the difficulties of somebody's life. And then when you magnify the difficulties in life, you're going to always minimize the blessings. Mm-hmm. So it really does. It just robs you of the joy that you could have and experience in your life. Because these people that you describe, you know, Helen Keller was she had some joy in her life.
Yes, yes.
The governor of Texas, he has joy in his life.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph in the Old Testament, he actually had joy in his life. And yet it might not have turned out that way.
Mm-hmm.
Had they adopted a different response to the things that happened.
Well, the whole movie industry, you know, I don't know the subject that well, but I can just imagine when you have a victim and they overcome, you know, that's a movie. When you have a victim and he doesn't overcome, that's not a movie. That you won't sell anything. But if you have somebody that suffers, it processes it, you know, overcome. And the greater the difficulty, you know, one of our presidents, Teddy Roosevelt, was a weak, sickly child. And, you know, in his early teen years, he just made a decision, you know, I'm not going to be a weak, sickly child. So he started working out, exercise, lifting weights. He started to box. You know, he started to develop an attitude of being a winner.
Yeah.
And he was intellectually like an exceptional, brilliant person. He read one book a day, like through his adult life. He read one book a day. Okay, so he was governor of New York, I believe twice. He was the president of the United States, he did a great job. But anyway, I like that profile. That makes a movie.
Yep.
That's something worthwhile watching, you know. Mm-hmm. That's a winner. That's what we are drawn to. But now notice, the world, in a way, doesn't want those people. Like the world, in a way, doesn't, you know, I'm just speaking very generally. What I'm saying is the world loves to put you down. I mean, they will hypocritically weep with you, but really don't have the means to, like, see you lifted up and carried on to be a hero or a victor. You know, that's for a narrow group of people, but generally not for everybody. Like, you have to, you know, you are there, and that we can't do anything about that.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is for you, and we don't have any answer for you. Christ, on the other hand, and the church, it has the message, and that is there is forgiveness, there is restoration, there is redemption, there is exaltation. If you humble yourself under the mighty hand of God, he will exalt you in due season. You will have the mind of Christ, you will walk in faith, and you'll get something done in your life.
Wow. It's true. When Paul wrote to the Corinthians, he said, now, we thank God because he always leads us in triumph through Christ. I mean, that we have to ask ourselves, is that true? And if that's true, because God tells us it is, can we adopt that? Can we embrace that?
Yeah.
Can we mix faith with that promise and say, despite what I see happening in my life right now, I believe that God's plan is greater. And this will eventually lead to some form of triumph in my life, because we have that kind of response of faith towards what happens to us or what people may do to us in life.
Oh, yeah. I mean, nay, in all these things, we're more than conquerors. Wow. And to know, you know, whether it's sword or pestilence or famine or nakedness, whatever it is, you know, that's what Paul is saying. That's Romans 8. I mean, that's Paul. I mean, and he has a whole life filled with that. His life is filled with that kind of oppression and resistance and hammering down. And yet he's writing with this, with this spirit and mindset.
That's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph's trial, you know, it's interesting because you can read the story of Joseph's life and maybe a half an hour, you know, from Genesis 37 to the end of the book of Genesis, chapter 50, 51. It's over. We can read it in a half an hour. But that was a 17-year-long trial in his life. How does God get someone through a trial of that nature, that long, that amount of time? Because maybe the initial question when we go through challenges like that is, okay, why? But then it leads to the next question, which is how long? But yet Joseph never seemed to embrace the victim's mentality. He never, you know, just gave up and placed the blame on others and said, woe is me. Look what they've done to me. I'm so disadvantaged. I can't even imagine where my life would be if these things didn't happen. All we keep reading in his story is that the Lord was with Joseph. And he must have acknowledged that along the way. And took great comfort and had such great hope knowing that God was with him and was somehow, some way, going to get him through it all.
Yeah.
17-year trial.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we don't know how the process went, but it might have taken him time to forgive his brothers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we might assume that he forgave them right away within a couple of days or weeks or a few months, but it might be that when he interpreted the dreams for the butler and the baker, you know, he knew the butler would get out, the baker would be hanged, and he knew that, but he said to the butler, when you get out, remember me, and it says that he forgot him for 2 years. Mm-hmm. So what I wonder could that be the Lord didn't let him out until he forgave his brothers?
Wow.
You know, like he could have had a grudge. We don't know.
Right.
Like he had an attitude. He interpreted the dreams successfully and perfectly, but then, like, it might be that the Lord is saying, I'm still working on you in prison. I'm working on your attitude while you are here in the prison. I am promoting you as a friend to the jailer, because the jailer gave him the keys. So he was, in a way, used and comforted, I'm sure, and so on. But still, it might be, you know, because forgiveness may not come easily mm-hmm. and quickly. It may be that I have to keep at it. But by the time he got out, I mean, I would imagine he, like, has already forgiven his brothers. And it's very clear to him that God is with him, and he's I'm moving on.
Yeah.
My brothers, what they did to me, that is what it is, but I forgive them, and I love them. They're my family. And he was good to go.
That's such a great thought, because today, when we read about genuine, authentic victims, people who have become victims, and, you know, they might adopt a victim's mentality, but then we might approach them and say, listen, really the only way to get through this is to forgive.
Yeah.
And then the response from those who have adopted the victim's mentality is, well, you're an enabler. You are enabling these people and what they've done to me. You're no help to me. But in reality, the only way to really truly be free is to extend forgiveness.
Yes, yes.
And yet, I think some people have found themselves so comfortable in a victim's mentality and have continued that way for such a long time that no, I mean, this would be such a radical, you know, decision I would have to make in my life, but yet it would set them free. It would liberate their souls. They would be able to go on in life and have some joy and be able to stop blaming everybody else for what's happened to them.
Well, I think one point along those lines is feeling God mistreated me. Let's say, make up a story. I did know of a brother who was born with a deformed, his two legs and one hand. And he had, one leg amputated at birth, I think, and then an artificial leg. And so who do you blame? Well, you can blame God. So do you forgive God? Well, yeah, in a way, maybe. But you could also go beyond and just say, thank you, God, and be thankful. I have one leg. I have two arms. I can think. I thank you. You gave me my life. Now, that might not, you know, a young child could go through in teenage years with a disability like that. But to learn how to think with that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have a victim who blames people and they need to forgive and be thankful to God. And then you have another one who that you don't blame people, but you blame God for it. But you need to like just accept it in the will of God and be thankful. And that's a big thing for people. It's not automatic. It might be something that I have to develop in my, and I really give a lot of commendation, a lot of praise to parents who are able to give their children. And any counsel that would direct parents in that direction, because it doesn't help the child to become angry with God and a bitter person. So that would be a real challenge. And then these war victims that come back from war with and those counselors, and I'm sure that the general counsel is to end up in a good place. You want to move on, live your life with what you got, and be thankful.
Mm. And of course, those are the stories that we read about, that we watch, that inspire us when we see those that, you know, have maybe they've been born with some kind of physical disability, or life has dealt them a set of circumstances that clearly was against them. And you would think would only set them back, but yet, because of the encouragement of others, parents, family members, mm-hmm. people that surround them that have a perhaps a mental attitude of faith, it makes such a difference.
Makes a big difference.
And they inspire us.
Yeah, it makes a big difference.
It inspire us.
Yeah, it inspire
is it safe?
And I could say, I don't know how good I would be at it. I would intentionally, deliberately, I would get counsel. I would look for people to teach me. I know it in principle, but to be able to execute it and to have an attitude every day, even when we're healthy and we don't have those problems, mm-hmm. we have to work at having the attitude every day. Of instead of falling into, you know, our morbid, selfish lifestyle, to go to faith and thanksgiving and singing and praise and thankfulness as a way of life.
Yeah. Is it safe to say that God's grace is available and sufficient for anything and everything that we would go through in life?
Yeah. I mean,
that's our answer, isn't it?
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're doing right now a religious program. What do you say?
Yeah. But, I love that verse. No. Hebrews 12:15, says, you know, don't fail the grace. Don't fail to appropriate it when grace is there for you.
Yes.
In other words, God says there isn't anything you will go through in life which I don't have sufficient grace for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we believe that, then we can face any challenge in our lives. Mm-hmm. And we can encourage others who face challenges in their lives that, listen, God can do it.
And it doesn't mean there wouldn't be a process.
Right.
The grace is there. I might be stumbling.
Yep.
It might take me, if I use Joseph's story, mm-hmm. he stays in jail 2 years more. Mm-hmm. Maybe he needed the 2 years to kind of deal with stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know that, but I could see somebody processing their Christian life over a period of time and stumbling and falling and getting up, but then in the heart really believing, if you made me this way, you put me here on this earth and you want me to have a blessed life, and I will accept that.
Yeah. We could say to people, you know, whatever it is you're going through, you'll get through it. It might not be quick, and it might not be easy.
Yeah.
But God's promise is you will get through this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, amen.
And
yeah.
That's a source of great hope. Just an interesting thought, you know, during seasons of when people run for elections, in the state of New York, this was something that was said. And this was said by one of the other political parties. They said, Republicans want to force women who don't want children to have them. Again, you can see how that statement is framed with the victim's mentality. Yeah. In other words, there's no personal responsibility on the part of those who are having these children or considering aborting these children. This is all about one group of politicians who are forcing you to have children that you don't want to have.
Yeah.
But this is and this is where identity politics has taken us in our culture today.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's out there supporting the victim's mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's really robbing people of a quality of life that God has intended for them to have.
Mm-hmm. Yes, right.
What a shame.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
This is such an interesting subject because we just see it happening. It's happening before our eyes today in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
I it could happen to us. That's the frightening part about it. Is that we could adopt this attitude.
Yeah, yeah.
And we could blame, look what my parents did to me. Look what my family did to me. Look what my church did to me. Look what, you know, society has done to me. Look what the rich have done to me.
Mm-hmm.
We could just go on and on and on.
Yeah, you know, if you have lived in the third world and you've been exposed to a lot of these realities that people live in, let's say a man in the next village is going blind. If he lived in the United States, he would get the eye treatment. He would not go blind. But now, because he lives in this country and he doesn't have that money or access or health care, he will go blind in a year. So then he goes blind. And how does he process that? He doesn't blame anyone. He accepts it as God. I mean, I know about this like you do. Like, we know that there are people in the third world and they don't have any options, but they have to have an attitude of like, I have met some that are just thankful that they are alive. Now they are blind, but they can use their hands and they can walk, but they're blind. It's like sad, it's ironic that the poorer people the poor people, the more disadvantaged people are sometimes the more thankful people.
Mm. Wow.
Then they don't have any option but to have a good attitude. Mm.
We are response able. And yeah. Someone might say, well, that's because you have a good response, but I have a bad response. But I think that we can feed our ability to respond the right way
mm-hmm.
by being with the right people, spending time in the right company, drawing near as believers to God and his word and his people and his plan and his purpose. All of that feeds the response. It feeds the soul. Because, you know, like the little poem says, two natures within my breast. The one is foul, the other blessed. The one I love, the other I hate, but the one I feed will dominate. We've got to feed the right nature in mm-hmm. our souls. And that goes a long way to, you know, even if we are a victim, we're not going to ever choose to adopt a victim's mentality. It can set us free. We can still go through life with joy, counting our blessings. Well, great subject. We've reached the end of another broadcast, friends. We want to thank you for joining us. And a quick reminder, the next Grace Hour broadcast is coming your way in a little less than 24 hours, so we hope you'll tune in then. And remember, we're not victims. Well, we might be, but we don't have to have a victim mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God for that.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Again, friends, thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow right around the same time. We hope to join us for the Friday edition of the broadcast.